X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, Senior Food Industry Journalist and Webinar Moderator at xtalks.com, and this week I'm joined by Aisha Rashid, Vera Kovacevic, and Sarah Hand. Thanks for coming today. So I'm going to start us off with a story about a company that I found called Oterra, and they are a leading global supplier of naturally derived colors. And they recently unveiled this innovative red and pink color blend specifically designed for plant-based meat and seafood alternatives. So the company claims that its Color Fruit and Fruit Max blends can closely replicate the appearance and characteristics of traditional animal-derived products. So these blends incorporate a unique combination of pigments that undergo color transformation while cooking, emulating the changes typically observed in animal-based meats. These product offerings allow manufacturers to create customized hues for a wide range of plant-based meat and seafood substitutes, including burgers, sausages, ground meat, meatballs, deli slices, salmon, and tuna steaks. So in a press release, the company said, designed by Oterra's world-class technical team, the new red and pink blends expand upon traditional colors for plant-based products by utilizing a special pigment combination that means the color not only looks great in the first instance, but also mimics animal-based meat by changing color during the cooking process. This is a company based in Denmark, and it's become the leading developer and manufacturer of natural coloring ingredients. It's got a customer base of over 1,600 food and beverage products and is renowned for its exceptional innovation, expertise in application and formulation, diverse product portfolio, and extensive global presence. Now, Oterra is actually, the name is inspired by the Latin word for earth, and it distinguishes itself from other natural coloring providers by offering top quality products derived entirely from natural sources like fruits and vegetable concentrates obtained from sweet potatoes, grape skin, spirulina, carrots, and beetroots. Now, these products find extensive applications in the food and beverage industry beyond just plant-based products, particularly in products where the transition from artificial to natural colorants is most prevalent. So this includes dairy and fruit preparations, confectionery, ice cream, and prepared foods and beverages. And dairy is kind of note because a couple months ago, I think we talked about some potential substitutes for titanium dioxide, which is that white food coloring that had been under a lot of scrutiny in terms of, you know, the safety or not. So it's interesting. Potentially, we may be seeing some white food coloring from Oterra. So this company prides itself on delivering exceptional products characterized by stability, vibrant colors, and extensive customer application expertise, and a commitment to sustainable agronomy and breeding programs as well. So these programs ensure that the procurement of raw materials is of the utmost quality, which is reinforcing the company's dedication to stability. So this company has had quite a bit of merger and acquisition history. So 2 years ago in 2021, the company itself was acquired by an organization called EQT for close to $1 billion, $939 million to be specific. And then shortly after, Oterra rebranded itself from CHR, maybe I'm not sure what that stands for, but CHR period, Hansen Natural Colors, and announced its first major transaction after becoming a standalone company with the integration of SECNA or SECNA Natural Ingredients Group into its portfolio. And then Oterra would continue expanding its portfolio with three acquisitions between 2021 and 2022. So in September of 2021, it acquired Diana Foods' natural food coloring business. In January 2022, it acquired Food Ingredient Solutions, which is a leading American producer of color and natural antioxidants. And later that year in July, it acquired the Ake Group, which is a leading player in the natural colors and nutraceutical ingredients market. So just in terms of the market overall for natural food coloring ingredients, it's witnessing a significant growth on a global scale, which is driven by compelling long-term trends, including heightened consumer consciousness regarding health and the environment, the conscious shift from synthetic additives to natural ingredients, and a rising demand for sustainable and plant-based food options. And additionally, scientific advancements and regulatory pressures have certainly expedited the transition from synthetic to natural colors, with the natural food coloring segment experiencing the highest growth within the market. And although it has already established itself as a leader in the space, doTERRA hopes to maintain its status as a key player in the natural food coloring industry. So we were talking a little bit about like the relevance still of the plant-based industry and whether, you know, maybe cell-based meat is going to be taking over that industry at some point. But I'm wondering if you guys think that beyond plant-based meat, whether these natural food colors may also play into the cell-based world, because it seems like they're going to have to, you know, find their color somehow. I don't think, like, tell me what you guys think. I'm not too sure about like all the science behind it, but basically what I'm asking is if you think these like natural food colorings will also have applications in like cell-based meat.
I think that's a really good question, and I'm not sure what the answer is. I think in terms of the major players like in cell-based meat right now, I think they're focused on not doing monoculture, so not just having one cell type. I think they're trying to include multiple cell types to make the meat mimic animal-based meat as closely as possible, or I would think so. But I don't know how that factors into things like I'm sure it increases the complexity of their job and also, you know, potentially the cost. And so I wonder if this might be another way using these natural colorants to make it look more closely resemble animal-based meat. And I think your point to, you know, these coloring ingredients actually changing color to mimic animal-based meat in the cooking process is really clever, because when you think about going to the grocery store, if you go to buy, let's say, something like traditional ground beef right now, everyone's looking for that like red color, right? That's how you know it's fresh. And I know that, I'm not sure if they do it in Canada, but I think at least in the U.S., there's even sometimes color added to animal-based meat to preserve that red color, because people associate the natural browning of the meat when it's been exposed to air, the oxidization, with, you know, the meat being not as fresh. And so I think in terms of, you know, seeing these products in the grocery store, oftentimes these plant-based, you know, meat products are right next to their meat counterparts. Being able to kind of like compare the color and say, oh, it looks so similar, but it's plant-based, I'll try it. And then having it change color to more closely resemble, you know, what that meat would look like when it's cooked, I think is really smart and something that I didn't realize was even a goal, I guess, within the industry. So, yeah.
Yeah, I that's a great point. I was also going to ask, like, how much you think it really matters? Like, you know, there's that phrase, like, you eat with your eyes first. And are things like this important in terms of, like, what consumers are looking for? Or would you say, you know, if they're eating plant-based, they don't expect it to be like meat? I feel like there's kind of two camps where there's a group of people who are like, oh, no, we don't care. We don't even care if it is, like, supposed to mimic meat. But then the ones who, like, still like meat and want to have a meat-like experience, and I think this would be more for them. But yeah, what do you think? Is it important?
I think it's like the difference between a plant-based meat burger and like a bean burger. I think a bean burger, you're sort of like, I know what this is. This is like another protein source. It's maybe shaped into a patty, but it doesn't have to look like ground meat. Whereas a plant-based meat, they're making a claim there just with the name and saying that this is going to resemble meat as closely as possible without it actually being animal derived. And so I think that's probably where the visual aspect comes in more. Not that the bean burger doesn't need to look good. I think it still needs to look good, but it probably doesn't need to look as similar as a like a beef burger. Yeah. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think, like, I'm not sure if right now, currently, plant-based meat and seafood substitutes are more expensive than the real, than meat and seafood. Like, what do you think, Sydney? Is it comparable?
I think it's close, more comparable than it used to be. I think also with, like, fluctuating meat prices too, it's kind of hard to tell, just because I feel like meat has gotten more expensive in like recent times. I think, yeah, I don't have a concrete answer, but I would say that they're certainly more comparable than what they used to be, especially the bigger brands. I wouldn't say like the smaller, like local or like, you know, just smaller brands, but I would say like the bigger brands, I would say, are close to the price of meat. Yeah.
Yeah, the reason why I'm bringing that up is because, like, if a plant-based meat or seafood product is very expensive, right, I think it should look visually appealing. Like, yeah. They need to justify the price somehow. And I think these, like, natural-derived colors, like these food colorings, Bioterra, I think they can really help it look more visually appealing and just attract more people to buy the product and keep on buying the product. But it's interesting to me, I guess, for like meat, yeah, you would want to go for the pink and reddish colors, but really nature can give you any kind of color that you want. You know, there's green, like from matcha and spinach, and I can go on. The only thing I haven't found is black, but I know like dark brown can be extracted from coffee and teas and stuff. So I found it really interesting, but like the amount of colors you can get from nature. But I think they need to be visually appealing for good sales.
Yeah, I wonder, I mean, of course, like the synthetic food colorings are a lot cheaper than something like this would be. I wonder, like, in terms of the price point, like, would this drive up like the price of these products, or is there a cost effective way? I'm not sure if you mentioned it, but yeah, like I wonder if these new dyes, these organic dyes, are more expensive.
That I don't know. I can only assume that they are, but I feel like a big part of why, you know, customers, or why they have such a large client base, is because they've gotten their color blends more comparable to like synthetic, you know, like it matters too to a lot of customers and, you know, a lot of companies. Like they will be willing to pay a bit more for naturally derived things. But yeah, I think just as a whole in the industry, we've talked about this so much, like synthetics and like artificial colors and flavorings, like do tend to be cheaper just because like they've been around forever and they're so widely produced. But I think we're coming around to these natural, and that's the thing about like artificial colors, is like they can be just as dangerous as artificial sweeteners, and I feel like every year we hear about like a new color or something that is now deemed as dangerous, or you know, in high quantities or whatever. So, but to answer your question though, I do feel like they would be a little more expensive, but probably worth the price.
Yeah, definitely. And I think consumers who would be buying a product like this, like you said, wouldn't mind paying a bit more just to know that the ingredients are more natural. And yeah, I think for this specific niche where you're looking at a plant-based meat that emulates meat, the real thing, and it's not something like a bean burger, I think definitely the color is crucial, because like you said, we eat with our eyes first. So, and I think, yeah, it's really cool how they're able to incorporate dyes that will change color through the cooking process. So I mean, yeah, a lot of thought went into this, so I think it's really neat. And yeah, I think there was a need for this, for sure.
Agreed. All right, so moving on to our next story. So I'm going to talk about the top five fastest growing food companies in 2023. So a couple of weeks ago, maybe months, I can't remember, on the podcast, I did the same thing except for the top three fastest growing beverage companies. So now we'll talk about the food companies. And this list is from the same list that I used last time. So it's from the Financial Times' assessment of the America's fastest growing food companies in 2023. So this list highlights the 500 companies across the Americas that have demonstrated remarkable growth in publicly disclosed revenues between 2018 and 2021. So this list was developed in collaboration with Statista. The rankings are determined by the compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of each company's revenue. And it serves as a comprehensive and prestigious benchmark for evaluating the rapid expansion and success of businesses throughout the Americas. So since their ranking encompasses a spectrum of industries, we're just going to be focusing on the food companies that made the list. So let us explore number one, and that is Whole Soul Blend Bar. So this is a company that was founded in 2017, and it boasts an array of award-winning smoothie bowls, along with organic cold-pressed juice and a variety of superfood options for breakfast and lunch. It's got two locations only thus far and plans to expand further, but it's quickly made a name for itself. In its inaugural year of operation, it garnered acclaim from a Reader's Choice magazine called 5280 Magazine, earning titles such as Best New Restaurant, Best Brunch, Best Vegan and Vegetarian Restaurant in Denver, Colorado. While the company's revenue is estimated at around $4 million, it's growing at a CAGR of 141% and ranks 48th overall on Financial Times' list in the food category. Now, the second one is a Canadian company, and it's one of two that made this top five list. It's called Organto Foods, and it's a global provider of organic fruits and vegetables. It's based in Vancouver, BC, and it works closely with strategic growers and supply chain partners to control and monitor each step in the supply chain, delivering quality products with complete transparency. So currently, Organto distributes organic produce to more than 100 customers in 18 countries in Europe. And since its founding in 2015, the company has acquired several brands, including I Am Organic and Fresh Organic Choice. And as of 2023, Organto Foods has generated $22.12 million Canadian dollars in revenue and is growing at a CAGR of 133%. And this company ranks 55th overall on Financial Times list and is the second fastest growing food company. The third food company is actually the only one that I had heard of because I used to be a customer. It is Good Food. It's Canada's number one meal kit service. It's based in Montreal, Quebec, and the company was founded in 2014 with a focus on preparing meal kits delivered to subscribers, but it's since expanded its offering to include ready-to-eat meals, grocery items, and breakfast products as well. Good Food's products are delivered across most of Canada, reaching about 95% of the population, and it has grown to become a significant player in the meal kit market. And as for its revenue, Good Food's total revenue in the last 12 months as of August 2022 was $237.9 million. It's growing at a compound annual growth rate of 75% and ranks 149th overall on Financial Times' list. Fourth is called Laird Superfood. It's a rapidly growing food brand that has gained significant attention in recent years. It's based in Boulder, Colorado, and it was established with the aim of providing functional and nutritious food and beverage products to support an active and healthy lifestyle. Its product line includes superfood coffee creamers, plant-based protein powders, hydrating coconut waters, and performance-enhancing supplements. Laird Superfood combines traditional, time-tested ingredients with cutting-edge manufacturing techniques to create unique and delicious blends. And as such, its total revenue in the last 12 months reached over $36 million. It's growing at a CAGR of 64%, and it ranks 177th on Financial Times' list. And lastly, at number 5, we have The Andersons, which is an agribusiness company that was established in 1947, which I think makes it the oldest food company on this list, and it has since become a prominent player in the agriculture industry. It began as a grain elevator business in Maumee, Ohio, and it has since expanded its operations and diversified its product offerings. And today it operates in multiple sectors, including grain, ethanol, plant nutrient, and rail. In its 2022 fourth quarter report, the publicly traded company reported a net income from continuing operations of $15 million. And it's growing at a CAGR of 61%, and it ranks 187th overall on Financial Times' list. So what was interesting about this list to me is just like the diversity of all of these different companies. So we have a restaurant, we have an organic food distributor, we have a meal kit, we have a superfood brand, and we have an agribusiness. So these are all completely, you know, different parts of the food industry that are the, you know, top five. And I like to see that because I'm glad that it's not just like a bunch of restaurants or a bunch of like direct-to-consumer businesses. I'm glad like they've incorporated a lot of different sectors of the food industry. And it's also of note to me, at least when I was writing this, that this list was not based on obviously their revenue, because the first, what was first on the list, Wholesale Blend Bar, I think had the lowest revenue, but it's the rate at which these companies are growing, which is what, you know, this list was determined on. But yeah, I want to get your thoughts on like the diversity of this list, and had you ever heard of any of these companies before?
Yeah, I had also heard of Good Food, and I have used them before, and I think they're probably my favorite meal kit service. And I had tried a few, like HelloFresh. There was another one, like Chef Food or something like that. But I think what I liked about Good Food was their price seemed competitive, and the variety, the recipes were like easy to follow. But the ingredients were something that I wouldn't normally get. And so some of the other meal kit services I found, it was like, here's ingredients to make a burger. And I was like, oh, I could do that on my own, like easily. Like I could just get those ingredients from the grocery store. I think when you're getting a meal kit, you want something obviously like, you know, easy to follow. But at least for us, we wanted something that was also going to introduce us to ingredients we wouldn't normally have tried. And good food definitely delivered on that. So I swear this is not a sponsored segment of the podcast, but I can say that I really like them. And similar to Sydney, they were the only company that I think that I recognized the name of on this list. And that was really interesting to me, too, that there is so much variation in the types of companies on this list. I think I expected to just see a bunch of, I don't know, food producers or food manufacturers, but it's neat to see all the different types of companies within this industry.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause that way you can see like, you know, what the trends are and where mm-hmm. like things are going toward, like with that, the Wholesale Blend Bar, it looks very like California to me. And maybe it's maybe like that California lifestyle in Denver is really picking up. So it's like interesting to see like, yeah, it gives you an idea of like what the trends are and where, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, not surprised, but interesting to see something like Wholesale Blend Bar, because it's, you know, they're known for breakfast and more like lunch type stuff. So it's like, seems like breakfast foods and these things are pretty big for it to have come out on top. I wouldn't have expected that. Like, not to say breakfast is my, you know, most favorite meal of the day. I could have it for lunch and dinner too, but like, eggs and toast and like, yeah, smoothies and all of that stuff. So it was pretty cool to see that, a company that kind of specializes in breakfast foods came out on top. And yeah, shout out to our Canadian companies mm-hmm. as well. It was really cool to see two of them on the list. So
yeah, I also noticed there was like a trend where the first two, Wholesale Blend Bar and Organto Foods, they do offer like organic food options, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's obviously very popular. And if you can offer like organic food in a new twist, I think that's like probably appealing to a lot of consumers.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm always curious about people's ever-changing thoughts on organic food because there's always been, I wouldn't say like a controversy, but just varying opinions about organic food and whether, it's worth the extra price. Mm-hmm. And obviously, since these two companies are on the list, then many people think that. Myself personally, I've never been too much of a subscriber, but I do see the value in it, I suppose, but just never really a constant buyer of organic food. I'd say the only time I ever buy it from the grocery store is when it's the only thing available and I need berries or something. Mm. But, if the taste is comparable and if the freshness is comparable, then I still don't really see the value in it, but I only speak for myself. I obviously do not speak for the rest of the food industry, but what are your guys' thoughts on organic?
Yeah, I think I feel the same. I rarely buy, probably because of the price difference and with everything else being affected by inflation right now. I mean, a pint of like regular non-organic berries is enough, instead of like stepping up to that next level. So I agree with that. I think the other important thing to point out about this list is the fact that there's a meal kit company even on there, because I know we've talked on the podcast before about, I think the meal kit industry really saw a big boom a few years ago, but it's really tough to retain customers. And I think that's super evident in the fact that I'm sure you're all receiving, coupons in the mail to get like 9 free meals if you sign up with one of these companies. So I think their biggest expense is in customer retention. And then, also getting new customers. But I think with so many options and with people often not subscribing to meal kits for a long period of time, I think it can be really tough to stay afloat. And we've definitely seen some meal kit companies go under. Plus, there's the logistical issues of delivering all across a country like Canada. And you said, they're making it to like 95% of areas. Keeping things cold, keeping things separated. I think a few years ago as well, we talked about some of the issues with having, meat and produce in the same container, and maybe they're not being kept at safe temperatures, things like that. So there's a lot that goes into that type of business. And so to see a company like that and a Canadian company to boot on this list, I think is really interesting. And I wonder what that means for the meal kit sector in general. Like, is it sort of booming again, or maybe it's just Good Food has figured out the right formula to be able to survive? I don't know, but I think that's an interesting point.
Yeah, you're definitely right about retaining customers, because I don't know anyone who, since they subscribe to a meal kit service, still has it, right? I think like during COVID was when I had first tried Good Food or one of them. I think it was Good Food. And I stopped and then started again like a year later, but I definitely got my like however many free boxes, because why not? And that is such an excellent way to get customers. And then if it wows you enough, then they'll keep you at least for a little bit. I think the one thing with meal kits is like, even though they're like customizable to an extent, you may never get like one of your favorite meals again. Like, because every week or however, 2 weeks or whatever, like the recipes change, which is excellent because you got to keep it interesting and different. You don't just want to be getting the same meals all the time. But let's say, you get an amazing meal and you want it again. What are the odds of it coming back like when you want it? It's a very like specific niche thing I'm bringing up, but yeah, I'm surprised to see it on the list just because like I thought it was a bit of a COVID boost, but clearly it's still it's still thriving, and I'm happy to see that it is it's a very cool service, and I appreciate companies that encourage like people to cook at home, like it, and it is one of those things, and if it can also help you save a bit of money or at least convenience, then yeah, I completely understand why people still subscribe to it. All right. Well, that's the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.